This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Welcome to Good Calls with Dean Blandino, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to another episode of Good Calls with me, Dean Blandino. A lot to get to, as always. Travis Hanson. Travis changing backgrounds, changing locations. Normally he's in his backyard. Now he's in the bedroom.
You know, this
is... What happens in the bedroom, Travis? What happens? Give me a word.
You have two kids, you sleep. That's what you do.
A word to describe it.
As you said before the show, where the magic happened.
That's right. I knew he wouldn't resist. Joe Madrid, Joe, handling the audio. Joe, what's up?
Just hanging out in space here. You haven't noticed.
Scott,
do you remember this hat? This was the hat that remember this hat is the one that Cal bought me when we were hanging out on 3rd Street that one time. Yeah. Dean's son bought me this hat.
This podcast is brought to you by Nike. We've got big sponsors. Scott is on a beach somewhere. Where do we think that beach is? Caribbean or Hawaii? Looks Caribbean.
It does look Caribbean.
Yeah.
Could be Hawaii. I wish I was there.
Don't we all?
2 week all quarantine. Right,
a lot has happened. This week. Obviously, you know, we had seen some of certainly the FCS conferences in college football had announced they were postponing to the fall. Conferences like the, you know, the SWAC, the MEAC, the Ivy League, all postponing till the spring. But this week we finally got some real big fish, two Power Five conferences. The Big Ten announced first on Tuesday that they were postponing the fall season, canceling fall sports with an eye to the spring. And then the Pac-12 followed soon thereafter, later on Tuesday, to basically say the same thing. So what does that mean? Right now you've got the autonomy. So if you think about FBS, right? FBS, there's 10 conferences in FBS. There's your autonomy five. And what that means is those are your power five there. That's your CFP, Big 10, Pac-12, Big 12, ACC, and the SEC. Then you have your group of five, right? So your group of five is your Conference USA, your MAC, your Sun Belt, your Mountain West, and I'm missing one, the AAC. So right now, and then you have your independents like Notre Dame and BYU, but right now we have two autonomy five pushing to the spring. You've got several of your group of five, MAC, Mountain West, Big 12, SEC, ACC are all still moving forward. The Big 12 has said, okay, we're playing. They announced their schedule, a part of their schedule. ACC saying their medical people are telling them they can play. They're going to push forward. SEC is still planning on playing. They've pushed back to late September. But who knows what's going to happen, right? All I know is I'm going to quiz you guys right now is the Sun Belt is hanging in strong and we are all going to be watching Sun Belt football.
Can't wait.
So let's start to brush up with our Sun Belt knowledge. Can any of you name one Sun Belt team?
Without Googling it?
Without looking it up. One Sun Belt team.
Southern Alabama.
Listen, you're just throwing a dart. This is the same guy that
went, here it comes.
Hanging out with this kid who went to SMU, and he was just like, we were watching the SMU game, and he Joe leans over to me like an hour into it, and he's like, what does SMU stand for? And like he was like Southern Missouri, you know, South Michigan, what is it? So. So it's not necessarily Southern Alabama, but the University of South Alabama is in the Sun Belt.
And nailed it.
You couldn't really miss that far throwing Alabama, just giving it a directional school. Meanwhile, if you go to a directional school, it's not, you didn't do that well in high school. Is all I'm saying.
Well, and what about those recruits that went there?
You name one?
I got Troy because my guy DeMarcus Ware went there. Longtime Cowboy player, played for the Broncos. Troy's good. Yeah.
One Sun Belt program that we should know. This is a small school that tends to beat the David to the Goliath at times. Come on, think about it.
Appalachian State beating up on Michigan. That's a
Appalachian State. So.
You got the Raging Cajuns down there.
We're going to be watching.
My favorite names, the Chanticleers.
Carolina, Arkansas State, I mean, Georgia State, Louisiana Lafayette, right? The Raging Cajuns. So it's going to be, if Sun Belt can hang in there, I feel like I'm watching a lot of Sun Belt.
Strength of schedule, though, they're not going to make it to the national championship. I'm just going to go out on a limb there.
The CFP, and it was interesting, Bill Hancock, who's the executive director of the CFP, did come out and say they're hopeful to still play a four-game, college football playoff with three of your two of your Power Five dropping out. It's interesting how that would play out. Again, when you look at this decision and the NCAA, and I think we've talked about this, the college football was always going to face bigger challenges than professional football. You're dealing with student athletes, right? You're dealing with, the campus, the academics, everything that goes into it. These are not professional athletes that are paid, that are
no players union backing them.
Yeah, they're not collectively, represented. And to me, it comes down to a couple of factors and in no particular order. And I don't know, each conference has made their own decision, but you think about, right, the health and safety of not just the student athletes, but everybody involved in college football, then there's certainly an economic consideration. I mean, that's why these conferences that haven't pulled the plug, are continuing to try to play a season because there is just so much money at stake. And then there's the amateur status. As you think about the voice that these college athletes, these players have started to, come out. The Pac-12 got together players from different schools around the conference and created a coalition to talk to Larry Scott, the commissioner, and voice their concerns. Big Ten players, others. So you think about this, does the NCAA really want to see these players start to organize and potentially, use that power? Because look, this system is, it's built on the backs of these student athletes that don't get paid. They don't even have the rights. That's a big, the image and likeness, debate has been going on and hopefully that moves forward. But, the scholarship is great, but, think about the time that's spent, obviously having to also, deal with school and grades and everything else, and then practice and working out. I mean, it's an insane time commitment, and I think these athletes should be compensated in some way. I just don't know what the right answer is at this point. But again, we'll see. A lot of people. What's fascinating to me is kind of the I don't think the Big Ten. If you look at the coaches and the players, and it's not a popular decision. It's not an easy decision, but it's not a popular decision. These coaches, these players, they want to play. Nebraska's gone so far. Scott Frost has gone so far to float out the idea that we'll play outside the conference. And Kevin Warren, the commissioner of the Big Ten, who's in his first year after replacing Jim Delaney, who was a longtime Big Ten commissioner, basically said, well, they could play, but they will no longer be a member of the Big Ten. So that's a pretty strong rebuke for Nebraska. Obviously it would be, I think it would send shockwaves through the whole system if Nebraska decided to go off and play in another conference or play as an independent. I don't know. It's just, it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out.
I, I saw the tweet from Steve Spurrier. Did you see that one?
I did not. What did he say?
And he said, well, with the Pac-12 and the Big Ten postponing, said the national championship will remain where it belongs, either in the SEC or the ACC, because five out of the last six have won the national championship. A team from one of those divisions.
Steve Spurrier also was, you know, he coached in the Alliance of American Football. And I've been through two spring leagues since then, so I can't even remember what team he coached. It was somewhere in the South, maybe in Florida, but they had the best record. Was it Orlando? They had the best record. And when the season, I live in the loudest area.
Is a UFO landing in your parking garage?
I'm two blocks from the beach. I'm one block from the promenade. You could not be in a better location, but it is loud between sirens and people. Unlike Joe, who have cars that have engines that go vroom, vroom, like to drive really fast and really loud past my place. So, but yeah, was Steve Spurrier trying to
get Orlando Apollos?
He was the Orlando Apollos.
They were undefeated, and so he crowned them the champions of the AAF when the league folded. I'm interested in your guys' thoughts on spring football because, you know, I know for a fact that when the Big Ten, you know, as they were looking at this a month ago, 2 months ago, if you looked at the options, spring playing in the spring was the last option. It was a last resort option. It was if everything else fails, the spring is the last option. No one wants to play in the spring. No one thinks that playing a full schedule in the spring and then turning around in a short window and playing in the fall is a good idea. I mean, there's so many issues with that. And ultimately, this is where we are, right? This is where the virus has taken us. And I think it's going to be interesting to see if they can play in the spring. Because to me, I'd love to see a spring season. I just don't think you can play a full season in the spring. I think you maybe you play a short season. Maybe you play 6 or 8 games. And then you give these guys a chance to rest their bodies and go out and get ready for the fall. The other thing is if you're somebody who's, you know, in their last year of eligibility and you're going to be in the NFL draft, are you going to play? Are you even going to waste that time and play in the spring? Or are you just going to go out and get ready for the draft? Like Micah Parsons from Penn State. I mean, he's going to be a top 10 pick. And he, you know, he's already said, I'm out, I'm done, and I'm going to start preparing for the NFL draft. I don't know what, you know, what that looks like at this point, but I don't know what you guys think in terms of spring.
Well, I'm just confused how eligibility is going to play out. I mean, that's one of the least pressing issues, but if the Big Ten and Pac-12, which have not canceled, but postponed their season, as far as I understand, if they don't play at all this fall, and then let's say they just roll into whatever the next season is, but then other leagues play maybe the spring, but if it's not a full season, like how is eligibility affected? And then, like you said, I just think like if you're splitting the Power Five conferences from who plays, who doesn't, it's just a big mess right now.
Yeah, and I think it is. And I think it kind of underscores really highlights the issue with college football and how you have the NCAA, but you have these conferences that have, they're almost like these little fiefdoms and they have their own little deal. And now, like you said, like the NCAA has left it up to the right. First they said, okay, we're going to leave it up to the divisions in terms of fall sports, fall championships. So Division 2 and 3 were like, we can't. We can't play fall sports. We can't play fall championships. They don't have the resources. And then Division 1, you're kind of like on your own in terms of, right, if the SEC obviously will have the resources and they decide our medical people and our health and safety, you know, people are telling us we can play and we have the resources to test and to do all these things, we're going to do it. Whereas the Big Ten and Pac-12 have said no. So it's so fractured. And I think it just kind of highlights the issue with college football, and you have haves and have nots. And that's why every year we watch Alabama and Clemson in the championship game. Right. And there isn't, and we watch Ohio State and Oklahoma and four or five teams playing in the college football playoff every year. And there isn't a lot of, for lack of a better word, equality around the college football landscape.
As a football fan, you want to see that. I want to see spring football. I just don't think it's going to happen to me. It was like a pipe dream that the media like has nothing else to write about. Us working in the media, we're excited about it. We see all these reports, stories, and then you hear, you know, I'm listening to press conferences yesterday of all the different ADs and people saying, you know, we can look at spring football, but I just don't know how feasible it is. And who really benefits from that? We're going to lose, you know, a lot of our best players who are going to go to the NFL draft. They're going to opt out. And I see like the people who benefit most from this are the guys who aren't going to be playing professional sports. You know, it's their last year. They get their last year of college sports, and then they go on to the real world. And
I think that's
great.
I think that's an important point. I think there's a couple of things. I think certainly there's an economic aspect to this that if you can, because these conferences, right, they've got big network deals. We broadcast, we lost two out of our three conferences on Tuesday.
I was feeling sick on Tuesday.
Right. So, you know, I'm hopeful that the Big 12 hangs in there and they can do it safely. And you know, we're going to be working a lot on Oklahoma State and Texas and Texas Tech and Baylor. And I'm brushing up on my Big 12 stuff, getting ready, because, you know, that's what we got. And, you know, but
Kansas and Baylor, that's what I'm talking about. We've had plenty of those games in the past 3 years.
Wait, Dean, you're telling me you're heartbroken that you're not going to get to do an 8 p.m. UCLA Colorado football game?
I'm not heartbroken.
No Pac-12 after dark.
I'm not heartbroken about Pac-12 after dark. I am heartbroken early window Big Ten, just, you know, mm-hmm. you know, late October in Ann Arbor or in Iowa City or Lincoln, like that's kind of cool. Like what, when you think of the fall and, you know, my seasons have gotten all screwed up since I moved to Southern California. But, you know, when I growing up on the East Coast and you think of the fall, you think of the weather starts to change. You get that chill in the air, the leaves start to turn, and it's college football, right? It's a part of, it's the fabric of our, you know, existence. And it is going to be, it's going to be weird. It's going to be really weird not to have that. But I will absolutely not miss Cal, Utah, 9 p.m. Pacific kick on Friday night. Like that, I won't miss that at all. I'm sorry. Nothing against, I mean, our most fun we had this year was Cal games, but not at 11 p.m. Pacific, right?
Was it, I'm sorry to continue to digress, but was it at Cal, Washington that had that 4-hour
Was it
lightning delay, weather delay, or something?
Yes, Cal.
We hold the record that will never be broken. There has never been a rules analyst hit later or earlier, depending on how you look at it, than that 1:17 a.m. Pacific. We went on and talked about a targeting call. Pacific. That means on the East Coast, it was 4:17 in the morning.
Yeah, okay. It was Cal at Washington, and it was 2.5-hour rain delay.
Lightning
delay.
That was insane. And the best part about the college rule, and it was, we were all over it because it was amazing. Every time there's a lightning strike that's within a certain distance of the stadium or visible, you add a 30-minute, you add half hour to the clock. And it was like, it'd get to like 6 minutes and then boom, lightning. Another 30 minutes, 10 minutes, boom, lightning. Another 30 minutes. That was, what did we have that night? What did we order? Did we get tacos? Was that one of the last times we had Taco Bell?
That was a Taco Bell night.
Can we talk about Taco Bell for a second? Can we?
Yes. Yes. Let's talk about it.
What's going on with Taco Bell? First, they get rid of the double decker.
I've been texting about this.
They get rid of the double decker taco, and then they bring in some like bootleg, like after the fact, this Dorito. It's basically a double decker taco, but they branded it with like Doritos. And I'm like, no, I'm not going for that. And then Scott drops the bomb today that they're not serving anything with potatoes.
It sounds like everything that has a potato in it is basically being removed.
I don't remember them having much of a potato.
Is this now I'm going to say one of two things. Like, do we have a potato shortage, or did somebody in the potato industry say something racist and they're getting canceled? Like, what's happening?
I know there was an article earlier in the year where they had to just throw away potatoes because there was a surplus of potatoes.
Too many potatoes.
Yeah. So they are getting rid of. Here's a list right now, starting Thursday. So tomorrow, I guess, as of record time, they're removing these items from the menu. The grill. Yeah. It looks like there's at least three, but well, what's it called?
A potato.
Well, here, I'll give you.
I can't think of anything on the menu with potatoes.
There's a potato taco.
The Wyoming place has potatoes.
There's cheesy fiesta potatoes.
Oh, yeah.
There's the cheesy potato loaded griller. That might be it, right?
Just potato taco instead of meat, they put potatoes in it.
To me, potatoes are not a big staple in the Mexican food.
They aren't, but it's Taco Bell is not traditional Mexican. It's Taco Bell, you know? They're getting rid of the Nacho Supreme. That's leaving the menu. Seven-layer burrito.
Who's making these decisions?
I don't know. We got a...
Did the guy that runs Taco Bell, did he have like a son that was like kind of a goofball? And now he's running Taco Bell.
We reached out to that goofball, but he wasn't available.
Mark King is the CEO of Taco Bell.
Well, he's ruining it.
It's like a Tommy Boy situation. Like, what's happening?
The funny thing is he got in August of 2019. And I got to tell you, if Dean's giving an evaluation, I think.
Awful. Probably. Ever since August 2019, it's been awful. Like, what is going on? Like, we got to get this thing. We got to find out. Let's do a little research. I want to find some dirt on this guy so we can get him out.
Let's start a Twitter battle with him.
Can we get him canceled?
But
open the menu and find something racist on the menu.
However, Dean, he's also the Wendy's guy, and you love Wendy's, so.
Mm. Wait, we're going to make Taco Bell great again, right?
Wait.
He's the Wendy's guy, too? How does that work?
Hold on. Mark King. Oh, no, he came from Wendy's. No, he came from Adidas. Okay, I'm reading it wrong.
Because the Yum
or Wendy's and Taco Bell at the same time.
If you go to
Wendy's is a different guy, Todd Penninger.
Yeah, because the stock ticker for Taco Bell is under Yum, YUM, Yum Brands, which is like Pizza Hut, Taco Bell.
Yeah, they're all connected because you can go in New York. I've never seen it here, but in New York City,
AFC
you can like one stop shop.
Yeah, combination like AFC, Pizza Hut.
Taco Bell, Pizza Hut one place.
There's a whole song, the combination Pizza Hut and Taco Bell.
Yeah, but that's racist, I believe.
That exists, like that's a thing.
Yeah. Combination Pizza Hut and Taco Bell. It's a great song. It's a great anthem, but I'm very upset right now because the Taco Bell that I knew is being destroyed.
Yes.
And it's not good for, a lot of Americans out there. Also, strictly speaking about potatoes, I have many vegetarian friends who like to go to Taco Bell who sub meat for beans, but also they can get like a loaded potato burrito.
Yes, when I was a vegetarian, that's who I was my go-to. I did the same exact thing.
And they're losing out because now, like, all the other fast food taco places in LA still have those options. And then Taco Bell's just saying, like, we don't care.
Wait, have Dean or Scott, have you guys had a vegetarian stint in your life?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah?
I mean, not a
Dean kind of did.
Not a full, my ex was vegetarian for a while. And so whenever we went out, we'd go to like vegetarian, vegan. And I mean, it was fine.
In LA, it's not a problem. It's very easy.
In New York City, it was fine. Like you can get, it's, you know, and what's good, if you go to, what was great about New York City is that you didn't necessarily have to go to a vegetarian or vegan restaurant, but you could go to certain types of restaurants that just felt like, we used to go to this great Ethiopian restaurant that there just wasn't a lot of meat and it was amazing. And, well, and you could go to different ethnic restaurants like that and just have a great meal and not really be in a place that was specifically vegetarian.
One of my, I am not a vegetarian at all and I've never been, but one of my favorite Thai places in LA is all vegetarian and vegan. And I'm like, the flavors are amazing. Obviously, Indian food is always a great go-to also.
Sure, Indian. Oh, yeah. Ton of Indian.
But, you know, Taco Bell, I'm taking off the list. Sorry. All
right, on that note, let's go to break. When we come back, we'll talk a little NFL.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
All right, we're back on Good Calls. What's up? Let's transition to NFL. You know, as opposed to college football, which there seems to be just a lot of chaos. Knock on wood, the NFL, it's been, you know, obviously we're still, you know, training camps just started, not a lot of contact yet, but it's been quiet, which is good. And there was, you know, Dr. Alan Sills, who's the chief medical officer for the NFL, did release the latest testing, the results and the numbers. Travis, what was that? I know Kevin Seifert from ESPN had tweeted it, and I had seen some other tweets. But what was it? The number was astronomical.
Yeah, it looks really great. It's 109, just over 109,000 total tests of all personnel through Tuesday. Overall, at 0.46% positivity rate. That includes just under 10,000 people tested league wide at the start of training camp. 170 new positive tests, 1.7%, and 53 of 2,840 players at 1.9%. So that seems pretty great.
Yeah, and obviously, look, we haven't started, you know, blocking and tackling yet, and that's obviously you know, adds, you know, kind of ratchets it up a little bit. But I think what a lot of teams are doing is they're creating, right, bubbles within their own little world, right? I know the Saints talked about, okay, it's voluntary, but they're going to have hotel space and you'll be able to go to hotel and versus doing, you know, going, doing your normal routine. There are restrictions in place where, you know, players can't go to, they can't go to indoor nightclubs or indoor venues with 15 or more people. There's, you know, gatherings are limited to a certain number of people. So again, it still is the honor system to some extent, but violations will be dealt with fines and discipline. But so far so good. And it's going to be, we're just gonna have to continue to watch this, because now we'll start hitting in camp. And not that there's a ton of padded practices really anymore. And we'll just, these numbers are going to be something we obviously continue to look at, but there's going to be, right, there's going to be positive tests. I mean, that's just the reality of it. And then it's how, you know, how do they deal with it? can they, because, you know, I know we had looked at some of those protocol documents. It's extensive. You know, I know Joe didn't really care to look at it. Got kind of perused. There's a lot of restrictions in there, and you know, it's, but I'm encouraged by the testing so far. And obviously the NFL has the resources. The testing protocols that they're using are top of the line. I did get, just, this is just sidebar. I had two friends of mine that were in Miami. They went to the stadium. I guess that's a testing location. They went, got tested, and within an hour they got their results. And these are just two people off the street. So if that level of testing is available to the general public, you got to think that the NFL is in, you know, in a good spot with what they're doing.
I agree. yeah. I mean, there's not much to say where it's like, I don't mean to be negative, but yeah, there's a very low percentage right now, but it's like, they barely reported, you know?
Well, this, yeah, Scott's the guy that likes, he wants to report the negative news.
Mm-hmm. He claims to be the realist.
He's the realist. Travis is Joe positive. Joe he's our resident kind of, what's the word?
Oh, I'm so excited.
You're our resident, I don't know, multiple personality disorder.
Okay. All right.
I don't know. Sometimes you're up, sometimes you're down. Like sometimes you're generally positive.
I'm an emotional guy, bro. What do you want me to say?
You're definitely emotional. There's no question. You're definitely emotional. It was interesting. The other news that came out was on the game officials, right? The officials have their protocols. Obviously they're represented by a union, and so they have an opt-out option, and that opt-out is for Thursday, August 13th is the deadline. From what I'm hearing is at least five officials, on-field officials, have opted out. And so what the league then has to do is they have to replace those officials. And I know everybody gets a little worried when you start saying replacement officials. I mean, but we're not talking about replacement officials. We're talking about college officials that were going to come into the league at some point. These were the top rated college officials that have been scouted and have been in the officiating development program, which is the program that the NFL uses to scout and develop officials. College officials. So new hires are happening, you know, this week. And, you know, I know of at least two that, college officials that were hired this week. And yeah, but those officials that opt out, basically they'll get a $30,000, fee for 2020, and they're guaranteed, their officiating employment in 2021. So, you know, if you have an existing condition or you have a family member, then it makes sense. And I know some of the officials that opted out do have family members that have issues. And obviously that's first and foremost. Replay officials can opt out. Replay officials would get a $10,000 fee for 2020 and then guaranteed their position in 2021. I don't know if any replay officials have opted out yet. But it is, when you think about it, you know, you already had your normal turnover, four or five officials, new officials being hired. Now you're going to add another maybe four or five and officials this year. And that with the number of new officials that come to the league the last couple of years, and you have a lesser staff. And that's certainly something that, with these younger officials, that they just have to continue to get reps and continue to get better. But that's the latest on the game officials. I guess from a positive test standpoint, who's the biggest name to test positive? That Doug Peterson, really.
Matt Stafford is a player. And I mean, watching Hard Knocks.
Matt Stafford was
right. And the Lions were pretty salty in their statement about it. I don't know if you saw that.
What did they say?
They were just saying, and now this guy had to miss time because of a false positive. I don't remember the exact wording, but when I read it, I was like, oh, they seem a little bit salty about this. You know, the quarterback has to sit out.
My Lions were whining in the statement?
Just maybe a little bit. Maybe that's just my opinion. But
the week he's missing right now is really going to make the difference from them getting 7 wins or 8 this year.
Ooh. Troy, that was not me. I did not say that. I'm thinking 11 wins playoffs.
I mean, it's like the NFC North is what it is. We know the Packers are going to be pretty good. The Vikings are going to be pretty good. And the Lions will surprise us in ways how they lose. it is what it is.
Only in Detroit.
It's very sad.
So, Dean, then, what do you think this... If there's an outbreak though within a team, like if you see what's happened with the Cardinals, who haven't played baseball in 2 weeks now, like how does it even happen? First off, like, you know, all these same guys on the team, they get tested every day, and then all of a sudden all these positives start showing up. Like, how does one guy get past the security and like all the testing? Like,
I think that's the issue with. Yeah, I think that's what the NFL has. That's how they've chosen to deal with this. That you, in theory, right? You have somebody that leaves the facility, and they get exposed to somebody outside the facility that has COVID. They then carry it, right? But that the incubation period is what, 3 to 5 days. So they could come in, they could test negative,
right?
Go out and practice. And spread it around, and we still don't know that person is positive, right? So that's, I mean, I'm not, Scott's our resident medical expert.
Oh yeah, and all the asymptomatic
stuff. See it happen, right? If it happens. And certainly you're going to, that, and that's where that incubation period kind of screws with us a little bit in these scenarios. And, you know, and ultimately, but that's why you have, right. They have the tracing mechanism where, okay, if somebody does
right. come
up with a positive, then they can trace, you know, who have they been around. Obviously they're supposed to social distance, during the, you know, when they're in the facility, and it's really going to be that, you know, when they're actually practicing, when they're actually, you know, playing games where, you know, you hope it's outdoors. You know, we're not in a closed space that you don't get that transmission. But like I said, I don't, if the experts disagree on this virus, I certainly don't know what the answer is.
A question to, just to jump back, because, you know, this is a podcast about officiating first and foremost. I didn't read 100% through like the COVID official things, but if an official gets sick or decides, can they opt out in the season? And how many, is there enough replacement officials if an entire crew is basically having to miss a week? Because obviously these crews go from city to city, or they get shuffled a little bit. But what happens if like 3 or 4 officials like from multiple games have to be quarantined?
Yeah, I mean, this is something that I've dealt with in the past, just in terms of your normal attrition during the season. You could have injuries, you could have illnesses, you could have other things that come up. And we've dealt with everything from you know, the ligaments or muscle injuries to actual, you know, a heart condition or something significant, somebody diagnosed with something and now they can't work. So you always have... You know, you have 17 crews of officials, and on any given Sunday, you like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
The most you can play, since you have 32 teams, are 16 games. So you always have one crew that's off, right? And then when you factor in buys, you could have multiple crews that are off.
Thursdays and Mondays,
right? And then you have your Thursday night and your Monday night crew. That are also, especially your Thursday night crew, could double up, right? Monday night's a little bit tougher, depending on where it is, but Thursday night, you could work Thursday and then double up.
Welcome to Santa Monica.
like leaning on the horn, like they're in Midtown Manhattan, and the delivery truck is blocking the entire side street.
Like there's probably six cars on the road out there right now.
That's what we're doing right now. That was necessary.
What's crazy too is I know where Dean lives. There's no reason on either the cross streets that he's at for anyone to be honking like that, because there's a lot of room where you can just go around.
The street is so wide. There's no to lean on the horn like that. Like you're a douchebag. And that could segue, not a segue, but foreshadowing. We're going to talk about douchebaggery in after the break. But I lost my train of thought. Where was I?
Oh, officials.
Talking about the officials and
groups. So you're always going to have additional officials that can work. This year, you know, they're going to look at they're certainly going to be, there's going to be a regional aspect to the crews. I think you're going to see crews mixed and matched throughout the year. So you're going to have, because you think about football officials in the NFL, it's very, think about hotspots for football in the country, right? That's how football officials, that's kind of where they live, right? You have a lot of officials that live in, you know, the Midwest, that live in Ohio or live in Pennsylvania or live in the Southeast, right? Florida, Mississippi, or out West, they live in California, right? You don't have a ton of NFL football officials that live in the Northeast, right? But there are a lot of NFL teams that are in that Northeast. So it's going to be interesting to see the regional concept and how you're going to, you know, mix and match, or maybe certain crews are going to work certain teams more than normal. Normally, the restriction is you can't work a team more than twice during the same season. I think they're going to break that. I think they're going to break that consistently. The reason you do that is because you don't want to create a situation where, you know, there's a familiarity that can create issues. There's, you know, you just increase the opportunity for something controversial to happen. And now you got to go back. You know, if we screw up a call in Philadelphia, now I have Philadelphia three more times, you know, that's a problem. So you just try to move people around. And, but you're always going to have additional officials. What I'm more concerned about is a crew gets to the city. So the way they're going to be tested is, Sunday game, they're going to be tested on Thursday before they leave for the game. Mm-hmm. And then when they arrive on Saturday, they will get tested again in the league city. Negative, we're good, right? No issues. But if I think the biggest concern is negative on Thursday, and then for some reason we get to Atlanta on Saturday and four officials test positive on Saturday. And now you got to figure out, okay, how are we going to get four replacement officials to Atlanta in 24 hours, right? You know, before that kickoff. And I think that's going to be a challenge. I think you're going to have people on the ready. You're going to have people within driving distance. You're going to try to limit the number of times people have to get on airplanes because, you know, you can get infected that way. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're in your car, less chance of something happening, unless you just like to frequent truck stops and you know, socialize and commiserate. I don't know.
Is there an opportunity then for, you know, music playing and then you're like, hey, is that Mike Pereira's music? He's coming out of the booth to go back down to the field.
Awesome.
That's number 77. Is that number 77?
And he's back like Ogie Oglethorpe in
well, he tears his suit off and underneath
it. Tears his suit off.
Yeah, just the stripes.
He goes out and officiates the game.
Yeah.
And kicks nine calls in the game.
Joe and Troy sitting next to him. Wait, Mike, where are you going?
It is. I don't think Mike being out there, but it's certainly feasible where we're gonna have late last second replacements, and you think about it, it's, you know, you could have a replay official go down. There's a lot of things that could happen. So the behind the scenes stuff is gonna be it's you know, I can't imagine. I mean, I dealt when I was in that role with the logistics, and I had a really good person that worked on the schedule and managed that for me, and she was awesome. But this is a this never dealt with anything like this. Like this is, you know, can you hear that? You hear
the music? That music?
It's like a mariachi band. Yeah, like I don't know. It's amazing. It's yeah.
Did that music take us to break?
This is a, from a logistics standpoint, it's a nightmare. Before we go to break, I do want to take a quick moment to recognize Howard Mudd passed away, and the sad long time coach in the NFL. This is a guy that's been around forever, and he just recently passed. So condolences to his family, and you know, that's a guy that when you saw Howard Mudd, like, that's a football coach. Like when you looked at him, like that guy was like, I just pictured him back in the day in the, remember the bike shorts and the,
you know, long socks,
the long socks and the polo shirt and the whistle around the neck. And like, he was a football coach, a football guy and a pretty good guy. So just want to take a moment to that. And, and lastly, before we go to break, we talked about spring football earlier, but wait, can you smell what the Rock might be cooking in the spring?
Yeah. Got a steal on that.
Is it possible that we could have some jabronis playing football in the spring? The XFL.
Yeah.
Is it possible? Like, I was reading some stuff. I'm like, I don't feel like, now you know a little bit more logistically, would it be possible to spin it up in time for summer? Or is that still just too much of a tight time frame and we're looking at like 2022?
Well, plan for XFL, from what I'm hearing, is spring 2021.
Wow. Okay.
That's a tight turnaround.
Yeah, I don't know for sure, but that's the idea, bubble concept. I think what's fascinating about this, and you have the, right, the Rock obviously has the WWE connection, and you go from Vince McMahon to the Rock, and all I did, if I'm lucky enough to get the opportunity to continue to work with the XFL, all I'm doing is changing my text message GIFs from Vince to the Rock. I mean, is, you know, when we talk about the XFL, but. So I think what's fascinating about this is it's actually Danny Garcia, who's The Rock's ex-wife, that's going to be running the XFL. And this is the first time in, I don't know if all professional sports history, but in certainly North American sports, where a female, you know, a woman will be running a sports league, which is awesome. And, you know, and like Travis mentioned, they got it. What a deal. $15 million.
I thought that was a deal too. I feel like we should have just bought it.
Yeah, because all we need, if we pulled all our money together, we'd need another what?
14.5 million.
14 something million. But yeah, I think it's exciting to, and ultimately, as heartbroken and as sad as, and I know I was, I think we all were upset. Even Joe was, you know, watched that last weekend and was pumped about XFL football. I think what, as sad as it was, I think the silver lining, those 5 weeks proved that if you do it right and you have the right people and the right broadcast partners, spring football can work. And I think that is why this group has come in. And they see that. And I think I like the fact that they're not looking to reinvent the wheel, that they're sticking with the XFL brand. And we're just going to go XFL 3.0 and let's see where it goes.
Run it back, baby.
I'm excited. All right, let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about a great American actor who has left us.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
All right, we're back. And it's strangely quiet in Santa Monica right now at this point. Not a lot of background noise. I do want to say I have a confession. I went a really good stretch from April to June without having one single peanut M&M. I am so off that wagon. Like I picked up a, now I'm going to kind of school you on M&M portion sizes, right? There's the little baby packs, right? Which are the, you can get them in the, you know, the individual packs. They have like four M&Ms in them, right? Trash. Don't even wait. It's my theory.
Those are like the ones you get at when you trick or treat.
You get, yeah, the trick or treat ones. My theory, and I talked to you guys about this, and I'm 100% sure it's true, but I don't have any, you know, science behind it. The smaller the bag, the worse the M&M. Okay. So those are the worst. Then you have those individual, they're not individual, but they're like the bigger one. I don't know what you call it.
Well, the
regular,
line,
like a regular right? size.
Check. There's two types of checkout lines. There's okay. the small one. And then there's what they call the sharing size. I guarantee do not, my recommendation, and I'm a peanut M&M connoisseur, never get anything smaller than the sharing size. Okay. Never. The M&Ms are never as good. Okay. Sharing size. Okay. Then there's a sharing size checkout line. And then there's an aisle sharing size, which is bigger. And it has the snap, you know, the thing that snaps together, you know, that you pull apart.
Yeah,
you
don't have to tear it. Yeah.
You don't have to tear it. Yeah. And then after that, right, there's a family size, right? Which is, that's where I start to share is the family size. Everything less than that, I won't share, but family size, you start to share. Then there's the Mac Daddy, which is the party size. So on Monday, I bought a family size. Okay. I ran through that by Tuesday. And then on Wednesday, I picked up a party size to hopefully get me and the boys through the weekend. So,
but you're sharing with the boys. That's good. At least,
yeah. Well, it's a party. A party size. You can share. So that's where I'm at.
And I'll say I didn't. I was skeptical, but I am a believer in what Dean has said. Now, where the bigger the bag, the fresher they are versus. You don't know how long those smaller bags have been on the shelves or whatever. The bigger batch bags, they do taste better. We had a little bit of a taste test this last fall.
Yep.
And I'm on board.
Good. I don't know if it's the packaging, if it's what you said, Scott, some of those other smaller ones, the air gets in. I don't know, but it's a real thing. Wilfred Brimley passed away. Wilfred Brimley, we were talking about this, and I want to talk, and Scott, you did a little research. I just want to talk about ages of actors. Wilfred Brimley, how old was he, Travis, when he passed?
Oh, I'm not sure. I think
this guy's been America's grandpa for 50 years.
He died August 1st, and he was 85 years old.
And if you asked me, when I was 10, Wilfred Brimley was 85 years old.
He's looked the same for 50 years.
Forever. Like in Cocoon, Scott, how old was Wilfred Brimley in Cocoon?
Okay, so Cocoon, the first film was 1985. So he's born in 34. So which means he was basically, wait.
51?
Yeah, but like, you know, with filming and everything, it's like he was probably 50 in it. You know, like 50.
And Google Wilfred Brimley. He was 2 years older than I am right now.
Okay, so the quickly it says he was 49 when cast, turned 50 in the middle of filming. Of the
I'm 48. Wilfred Brimley was a grandfather in Cocoon.
Mm-hmm. yeah, he's one of those guys who just always.
And he's always like, Wilford Brimley could sell me anything. What was the other ads he used to do? He used to do like insurance or something.
Diabetes.
Something.
No, he was the diabetes guy. He was the
diabetes guy.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever he said, it was like, you could not trust Wilford Brimley.
Oh, you're right. He did. He was in Liberty Medical.
Yeah. I always remember that.
Yes.
And he was probably doing Liberty Medical commercials for people over 65 as one of them at 52. he unbelievable. Wilford Brimley. What else was he in? He was in so much stuff.
He was in the one movie I love him in is The Thing. The Kurt Russell he was alien. In
Flickers. Wasn't he?
No.
No, who am I thinking?
Oh, yeah, that's Jack Palance.
Oh, I'm thinking of Jack Palance. Okay.
Oh, but hey, we in not like not on the podcast, in a text message, I also pointed out that in the movie City Slickers, the midlife crisis that Billy Crystal's character is going through is that he turned 39.
39.
And you're like, for whatever reason, I always thought he was much older also in that.
100% older.
I just turned 39. Where are we going to go, guys?
We're going to go herd cattle.
Well, we've got Travis just had a birthday. Joe has a birthday coming up. We are going to do, I'm hoping to plan, a birthday dinner next week sometime. If we can all just get our masks and go somewhere and have a nice meal.
Yeah. I mean, I'd love to just see what the Blandino chef can whip up too, you know?
Ooh, I can make a birthday lasagna.
Dude, make a birthday, what's it called? Gordon Ramsay.
Ooh, you want to do a birthday beef Wellington?
Bro, I'd love that. I was in Tahoe this week.
And I got to go. I don't know. I got to go get a beef. I got to go get a tenderloin. I got to see if the butcher has it.
Dude, I was in Tahoe and they have a Hell's Kitchen there and you couldn't get a reservation. I wanted to go so bad for the Wellington.
Yeah, Luca and I want to go to the one in Vegas. And try. But hopefully when things open up, we can do that. But RIP Wilford Brimley. just like I said, America's grandfather for a very long time.
Oh, here we go.
Oh, there's a car going on the street.
Yeah, exactly. The sports books, Joe, talk a little bit about that, just how COVID has impacted sports. Was it July? July was the first month since 2013
that Vegas took a
books in Vegas took a loss. So think about that, all you sports gaming, all you people that bet. They hadn't taken a loss since 2013.
Okay. What happened in 2013? Because I was reading that article and the reason this one was a loss was because of all the futures bets. For football futures bets, what happened in 2013?
I don't know. What would have been the issue in 2013, Joe?
I don't know. You gotta tell me. You gotta ask me these questions. You gotta give me a minute to prepare.
Look at that.
We can talk about the future bets that
bigger point is like you're chasing. It's a pipe dream. The house always wins.
Right.
Well, the reason the house always wins is because, I mean, you're flipping a coin essentially, and you're paying $1.10 when you lose, and you're paying $1. You're making $1 when you win. It's simple math, but people think that, you know, whatever. Everybody has a shot, I guess.
Everybody has a shot.
A quick article suggests that 2013, the bad month basically was the British Open. Books lost a lot of money during July
because July of the British Open.
Phil Mickelson was a 25-1 long shot to win, and he won.
Ah,
the 2013 NBA Finals were. Let's see here.
Was that LeBron and the Heat?
Well, apparently it was game Spurs 6 were in the finals.
5,000 favorite to win the game.
Oh, the Spurs. That's LeBron, the game
James and Ray Allen hit improbable three-pointers.
And then they should have won that series. And Ray Allen hit the three.
And LeBron hit the three, yeah.
Yeah, and so people were betting in during that game as well. Spurs looked like they had it handled. So I'm sure mid-game action was getting crazy.
It's amazing how one game and one golf tournament. But I could see Mickelson because he's so popular. And I don't know a ton about golf, but if I had to bet on it, like, I'll throw some money on Mickelson. I'll throw some money, obviously, on Tiger.
And at 25-1, you're just like, I'll throw a little bit down and then the payouts.
He's easy to cheer for, too.
The one this week that Colin Morikawa, people went crazy on that dude. They probably lost a lot of money this month on that win. Because he was like a huge dog. Huge.
Yeah.
A lot of people liked him. People love betting underdogs. It's like betting on Rudy, you know? Is he going to make it on the field? Everybody wants
to know. I read about Rudy, and I did not know this, and I'm upset that I know it now. Have you ever heard Joe Montana talk about Rudy?
Yes.
You know, Joe Montana played with Rudy.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And he didn't come out and necessarily debunk the whole thing, but he didn't really look, we know it's a movie, right? So I get it, it's a movie. But he was just kind of like, we used to kind of make fun of him, and I was like, I'm not listening. But it was just interesting to hear him talk about it. And I guess, he did, right? They did carry him off the field. He played I think he played 3 or 4 plays. He did get a sack. But it was just,
Isn't carrying him off the field the way that, like, I was a terrible athlete in high school, but everyone was like, hey, Scott got it. Like, he's good. Yeah.
That's what Joe Montana kind of made it out to be. Like, it was kind of like a funny thing.
Yeah.
That we were carrying Rudy off the field, like, as a funny thing. Whereas I'm watching the movie and I'm literally, it's the most inspirational thing I've ever seen. Like, With Charles Dutton like sitting there and the whole, and it was, and what was fascinating was that let me just check on the Dodgers score, was that they filmed it. Obviously, they filmed it at halftime. They filmed part of that scene, the last game scene, at halftime of an actual Notre Dame game.
Oh, that's interesting.
Well, if you watch the movie again, you can tell the scenes that they filmed during halftime, and then you can tell the scenes that they didn't. And they had, like, because it's just a very like narrow perspective, and you just have a little bit of the stands and you see the coach on the sideline. But then when you get a wider view, you have all the fans and everything else. Listening to Joe Montana talk about it was fascinating. But again, it doesn't, It's Rudy. I mean, the guy, he went through so much.
He's a tax fraud, right? Didn't he get in trouble?
His best friend died. They completely glossed over the fact that his brother started dating his girlfriend who he was supposed to marry. He comes home for like Thanksgiving or Christmas, and his older brother comes home with his girlfriend. I was like, that's not cool. And he goes to Holy Cross. He doesn't get in, finally gets in, thinks he's going to get in the game because one coach tells him he is. Then that coach leaves. The new coach doesn't want to help him.
All right, you convinced me. I'm going to watch Rudy tonight again.
Yes.
I love it. This is kind of embarrassing, but I read the Rudy's Rules for Success book when I was young.
Of course you did.
And my friend used to always get in the car, hang out with me, and he would make fun of me. Rudy, Rules for Success. What'd you learn this week?
Remember any of the Rules for Success? Does one stand out?
I don't remember, but my buddy who used to make fun of me is still living with his mom, so there you go.
Hey, so the rules worked for you.
I don't know. Yeah, of course.
He's not living with his mom. How are you, Joe? You're pretty good with like fashion and stuff. And do you have anybody that you follow, or you just, is it just a sense that you have, or is there any,
For a minute I thought you were serious and I was like, wow, that's a really nice thing. Here you are.
No. I'm being serious. Like, you've got like, is there anybody you follow? Cause I've got like a mentor now.
You do.
I have a mentor. Yeah.
It's not me.
Fashion mentor.
Not you. I've got a mentor.
I don't really. No, I don't. I just like what I like.
It just comes to you like those outfits that you'll throw together. that's just natural.
Yeah.
Do you walk into a store and just say, like, you see the mannequin, you're like, yep, that's it. I'll take
it. Never. Never in my life. That's the worst thing you could do, actually, Trav. I want exactly what's on that mannequin right there. No. I try to get what most dudes don't like. So that, right now, Travis,
if you were Joe, if you were going to give Travis fashion tips, knowing how he dresses, go ahead.
I would just say size down a little bit.
Let's pretend Travis is single and he's ready to mingle. Size down.
I'd say size down a size. Your stuff's a little big, and no more plaids.
Oh, plaids. That's his dad plaid, though.
No more plaids.
If you were just a single guy, no kid, and you were just getting back out there, yeah, that's pretty, Joe. I think that's absolutely reasonable. Probably you'd want to work on layering. Just get some good patterns.
Good layering would be good. I think earth tones would look good on you with your skin tone. And
all right. Good to know.
You know, the shoes. We got to work on the shoes. But other than that, you're good, man. You look great.
You mostly only see what I wear to the office. Like if you see me now, it's t-shirts, Billabong shorts, and
football. It's beach time. It's beach time with Travis.
But that's married dad Trav, dude. We're talking single Trav jump kicking dudes out of the club.
Yeah.
You know, some skinny jeans or some like joggers with some Jordans on with the backwards hat. You're going to kill someone. Boom.
Backwards hat.
You're like, dude, did you see that? that dude jump kick somebody?
That finely dressed dude that drop kicked that other guy?
He looked like a Caucasian rattlesnake coming out of nowhere.
So I like to, before bed, I like just kind of get on YouTube and just watch random videos, maybe, you know, whatever. And I started like, I don't know why, but this guy kept coming up in my YouTube, with grooming tips. And he's a male model and his name is Weston Boucher. And he's from Southern California, and he's got like his own Amazon page, and the dude is super cool. And he just gives like advice to regular people, like regular dudes about like grooming tips and moisturizers and other stuff. And I'm like addicted. Like, I'm like, teach me, Weston. Like, what do you got for me?
Yeah. But Dean, I'm looking at this guy, dude, this dude will look good in anything. He's shredded. And like a perfect jawline. Come on.
He's a male model. Yes, we understand. He's a good looking dude. He gives diet advice. He gives workout advice. Just general life advice. And he's like super cool and down to earth. And
I'm going to start another one of these for the normal man who doesn't look like a male model. Just a regular dude.
He's trying to help. He looks like a male model. He's a good looking guy. He has all of these things. But the stuff, the way he does it, like anybody could do it. Like anybody could do it.
Now, in fairness, it does look like he lost a lot of weight, got a better haircut, and got like ripped. So he didn't, you know, this is his six pack is made in the gym and the kitchen. It's not natural.
Yeah.
So let's give a shout out to Weston, who I just heard of for the first time.
Yep, 30 I'm seconds telling you, ago. You just watch one of his videos. He does tend to talk a lot, but I like it. I'm in.
I mean, he's good looking dude, and you dress nice though, Dean. Even when your stylists aren't dressed, you dress well. But I think I've kind of noticed your wardrobe, and I think you just go in to like the really expensive place and buy like the expensive shit, and you're like, well, if it's expensive, it's going to be cool. Is that
so? Interesting you say that. I do have that mentality sometimes where like, if I'm going on, right, I had to, my vacuum broke. So I went on Amazon to buy a vacuum and I didn't even like read the reviews. I was like, oh, that one's cost more than that one. That one must be better. I'm going to get that vacuum. Right. Which is the worst way to do it. Like absolutely worst way to do it.
Why wouldn't you have called me, dude? I know all about vacuums.
Do you really?
Oh yeah. Dyson from Costco. Dyson from Costco is the way to go. You can return it anytime.
Wait, which one is?
Just get a Dyson from Costco and every 2 or 3 years, swap it out for the new one. But see, you're not frugal. Like, I'm frugal like that. And I'm not, by the way, I'm not talking shit. Like, you're not wearing like Gotti Versace over the top expensive stuff. But, like, you wear a nice pair of jeans. It's not like ugly. It's not ridiculous.
What brand I really like is Theory. I love Theory stuff. And it's kind of expensive, but it's really good.
If you could look as good as Travis with Old Navy, then you're doing right.
Not to, make fun of everyone, but we went on a derailed conversation about the best vacuums. This is definitely old man territory now.
Well, Travis Scott is building his own PC, so this is a Hikerin cordless vacuum. That's the one I ordered. I don't know.
Brandon Blandino. Guy wants to be friends on Venmo. He also wants to FaceTime everyone. Dude, WTF.
Yeah. What?
Who?
Actually, there's a guy that I wanted to be friends on Venmo. Like, I didn't even know you could be friends on Venmo. But to me, that's taking this virtual friendship thing to way too far. Like, Venmo? Like, what?
Also, can I add, just why ever have public Venmo? Always private.
Why? That's the other thing. Yes. Why do people pick public?
I didn't know there was an option. I think mine's always been public.
No, of course there's an option. You go
private. I had no idea. And I was just wondering, why am I able to see what people are sending each other, like within my people I have on my contact?
Like, I'm looking, okay, I'm on Venmo right now. And it's insane that all these people are doing, like, this, okay, tie-dye joggers, reffing August 7th, 9th weekend, gracias, golf, Kurt's money, river, please give to Z to give to Maxine.
Yeah, it's like, I don't care. Like, they're treating the feed as if it's like this social feed. It's like, no, yeah. I don't even look at that.
Friending me on Venmo. Venmo, I love Venmo to pay, to pay that way, but I don't want it to be public. And then do you ever have a friend that just wanted to FaceTime?
Dude, my brother today, I'm just sitting here. There's and no he just reason. FaceTimes me. He's like, hey, I'm going to come.
Reason.
I agree. Young people, that's a young thing.
There's young no reason. I'll FaceTime with my kids if I'm traveling. There's no reason to FaceTime. When I see people walking down the street FaceTiming someone, if Joe, I will FaceTime you if I'm trying to fix something and I think you can help me.
Yeah.
Right? That's it. There's no reason to FaceTime.
No, dude, Travis, that's a young people thing. If you're like under 30, under 30, 32, they don't even call. They FaceTime everybody. It's like, dude, I don't want to. I'm walking through the mall. I don't need you walking with me. Just you want to talk?
Can I complain about old people real quick? Which is when they have a call and they're holding the phone like this, but it's on speakerphone.
Yes,
it's like it's a walkie-talkie.
But just put it, if it's that close to your face, just hold it to your head, and then you don't need the speakerphone part on. Because, and I swear, it is mostly like older people who do that
without question. Yeah,
they're like, where am I going?
Just people that talk on speakerphone in general.
They never have. It's always on ring, right? That's always.
I mean, all of last year.
I'm in the studio, I'm doing a hit, and Luther's phone is ringing, and it's
50 Cent
in the club by 50 Cent
or Rocky.
Or Rocky, or just a ring. I will never ever.
Even Pereira has his phone on, and he's like, he's gonna go on the air, and it's ringing.
It's ringing.
What would be like a funny challenge is like everybody gets you get to pick your friend's ringtone, and you have to keep the ringer on.
That doesn't sound fun.
It'd be hilarious.
That's not bad. I like that. I like that. Let's do that.
Okay.
Next time we can be in public, let's do that.
Is that going to happen? So wait, did you even tell us who the guy was that he wanted to FaceTime, or that's two separate things? The guy that always wants to FaceTime.
He friended me on Venmo or sent me a friend request on Venmo. I was like, no, I'm not friending anybody on Venmo. And another friend that just FaceTime all the time.
Okay. So that was two. We really gave you guys two Brandon Blandinos in one.
Yeah.
I'll FaceTime with, like, obviously with my parents and then friends who I want to see them and their kids, like, just because they, I don't live near them.
Yeah. That's different.
Right.
If I just call Dean right now, like tomorrow, and I'm FaceTiming
it. I'd be like, I would text you, the rest of you, and be like, Scott's a weirdo and he's out of the group.
What about like this kind of group call? Like if you just send a FaceTime call out just randomly to a group of friends, is that out too?
It's only cool if you like plan it. Like, hey guys, let's all grab a beer, and especially with COVID, let's do a group
FaceTime. I get during the quarantine, and now like I could see why FaceTime would be right. You want to see people that you don't, but in a normal world, if I got to call Scott, I'm not FaceTiming him.
Like, right. Now I think also if I out of nowhere FaceTime you guys and I had something really funny or something to show you,
then,
if I'm just, hey, Dean, just wanted to see your face.
Yeah. No.
The problem is the first time you abuse it, it's done.
Yeah.
If you FaceTime me out of the blue and I pick it up and not like an emergency.
Okay. So when is it okay to FaceTime?
When there's something you need to see or some sort of an emergency.
I think. People that live in another state, family, kids, you're traveling, I think that's okay. So I think family, like I FaceTime with my mom sometimes, I FaceTime so that she can see her grandkids. Great.
Totally inbounds.
That's inbounds. That's
acceptable. What about if I use the restroom and it looks really funny and I gotta show you guys?
That's a picture text.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
Picture text is different. Exactly.
Okay.
That's the other thing. So even if you see something funny, right, the picture text is still the first thing to do. Then it would have to be something actually movement that the picture, the still picture would not capture that you could FaceTime.
Here's an example that I probably still just send a video of it. But like if I saw Pereira out at a bar and he's dancing.
You would video it and then send the video.
Yeah, and then rather than like, guys, you got to see this. Like, I agree,
then we could have lots of fun with that later on down the road. Exactly. We could make gifts.
I'm honestly thinking FaceTime. There isn't, even when there's something funny, I don't think FaceTime's appropriate unless you need that person or you
interact or add to what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah, like I don't see another reason. Or like I FaceTimed Bondo because I had something was going on with my camera that I bought and he was going to help me fix it. So I FaceTimed him so he could actually see it. But other than that, I don't.
That's within the rules for sure.
But if you're going to just FaceTime and you'd be like, hey, I just thought it'd be cool to see your face and talk like this. You're weird. No, I'm not doing it.
I'm in agreement with you.
We're all in agreement, I think.
Yep.
All right. Well, that's it.
That's a rule.
This has been Good Calls with Dean Blandino. Keep following me on Twitter at Dean Blandino and at Dean.Blandino. Follow the show on Instagram and Twitter at Rules Podcast, and be sure to rate our podcast on the iHeartRadio app on Apple Podcasts.
Good Calls with Dean Blandino is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.